turned to his office a few minutes late to meet the person who he had come to counsel. She was crying uncontrollably. He comforted her, assured her she could continue crying till she was ready to talk. Finally, when the tears stopped, he asked what it's wrong. As she cried, he was kind of stumped. This woman was a respected woman in the church, respected by her peers, a stable woman who was a leader in the Sunday school department. And he could not understand what it was that was causing her to be so uncontrollably in tears. Usually a pastor, if he knows the family, can tell certainly something about what might be leading to the problem. Everybody tune your horns, that's B flat. Did you turn this off? Okay. Finally, the woman stopped crying, and he asked her, what's wrong? She related that there was a revival in town, and she and her husband had been attending. He said, yes, I've even gone a couple of nights myself. She said, last night, at the end of the service, my husband and I went down to the altar, and the speaker prophesied over us that we were going to be missionaries in the Middle East. She was crying uncontrollably, saying, I don't want to leave this church. I don't want to leave the things I'm doing. I don't want to leave. Yet my husband this morning put the house up for sale, and he gave notice at his job. Now, what would you tell a woman? What would you tell her? She had heard from God. What do you say to the person when they say, God told me? The pastor said, there's nothing I really could say. I can't say, well, no, he really didn't tell you that. You can't say that. He doubted that God was at work in this situation. But what choices did he have? They had to be obedient themselves to what they felt God was calling them to do. Is that how God leads? Is that how we should look for leadership? When we're faced with a difficult situation, how should we look for God's leadership? You've been in the situations. This job or that one, Lord? Which one? What do I do? You tell me. Which college do I go to? God, you tell me. Which one? What am I going to do? Should I invest in a home right now, God, or should we keep saving money? What do we do? Should we have more children? Or is six enough? What shall we do? Should I marry so-and-so? Should I? I mean, I love her. Should I? I don't know, God. I don't know. We've been in these situations. We just don't know. You don't know. And you're perplexed. Well, this morning I want to speak about God's guidance. How would God guide? How could He guide? And how much guidance should we expect to find? And I'm going to be very personal this morning. I'm going to share with you what I've been experiencing the last year and a half in my life. On the Sunday mornings that I'm with you so far, every Sunday morning I've preached, this is number 5 in the year that I've been here, I share quite personally because I want to share with you what's going on in my life because I want it to be relevant and I want to be full of enthusiasm and conviction. On Sunday nights, I don't have the opportunity to do that because when I finish chapter 5, I don't have to wonder what I'm going to preach next week. I'm going to start chapter 6. I don't have a choice. But on Sunday mornings, I'd like to be personal, and this morning I'm going to be very personal. Now, I want to warn you, I'm going to talk about hearing from God and God speaking to me and things that God has told me and showed me. And I want everybody here to understand, especially if you're a visitor, I am not talking about God ever speaking to me in an audible voice. I'm not referring to that. I will say this morning, God told me something. He did not speak in an audible voice. And if you ever hear an audible voice, you'd better come see us. Now that's funny, but I'm serious too. I'm going to tell you about four events in my life. Some of you have heard the story. You're probably going to throw up. Jim and Mary Benham, just bear with me. I'm going to mention Rita, the girl back in Dallas. Many of you know I've had a relationship with her, and I've been perplexed about that relationship, and I'm going to talk about it this morning. Okay? Four events in our relationship together. Going back to the fall of 1984, we started dating in the summer of 83, and we dated then for a year and a month, a year and 2 or 3 months, until the first event that I want to speak to. Late September 84. I was awakened at 5 o'clock in the morning. A young boy was staying at our home, about 5 years old, and he came into my room sick and nudged me. He didn't want to be alone, sick. So he climbed into bed with me, but now I was awake. 5 o'clock in the morning, and God spoke to me. He'd been speaking to me for the entire weekend before this Monday or Tuesday morning, but I'd been ignoring it. He was placing kind of like little BBs just entering my mind. As soon as they entered, I cast them away. I did not want to think about this. But now it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and God was going to make me think about it. And it came across like a nagging conscience, something in my mind that said, Carter, break up with Rita. I want you to break up with Rita. Give her up. Like Abraham offered up Isaac, put him on the altar, said, God, it's yours. You give her up. So I didn't want to hear that. And I was angry lying in bed, because I knew that was God. I knew that was Him speaking, because I'd had these hints all weekend long. And I felt that He was dissatisfied, and He had my attention. So 2 days later, I broke up. Now, understand, we loved each other. I was in love. She loved me, but I was in love. I knew I was in love, the kind of love you can build a marriage on, and I knew I was there. But God said, you break up. So we talked about it 2 nights later, and we broke up. And you understand, we walked away. We both loved each other. We weren't angry. She went home and figured if God gave me the message to give her up, she'd take that as a message to her too, and so she gave me up. And we walked away from it, though we talked on the phone. When I told her we were breaking up, I said, Rita, I don't know how long God wants this. He may just want me to give you up for 2 days, maybe 2 weeks. I understand the problem in my life. I'm spiritually a little bit on the dry side right now, and I'm more in love with you than I am with Him, and I'm more concerned about you than I am with Him. I'm more concerned about the kingdom of Rita than the kingdom of God, and I know that's why He's doing it. I understand now why He's doing it. It may be for 2 days to get my heart realigned. It may take 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. I don't know. But I've got to walk away. 1 year later, we were not back together. Though we had wished we were back together, we had talked about it. The clear message from God had been, give each other up, walk away. And there had been no message, get back together. 1 year later, I was living here in Baton Rouge. Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped my story. 1 month later. Let's go back to Dallas. 1 month later. We had been broken up now for a month. And I was traveling around the country with a speaker. And so I'd come through Dallas. And I called her once as I was headed to Shreveport for the weekend. I said, when I come back through, could we get together and talk? And she hesitated and said, well, okay, if you want to. Gosh, if you don't want to, then I don't want to now. When we first talked on the phone after the breakup, she would say, I miss you. I said, I miss you too. A couple weeks later was, I really miss you. And I miss you too. But this time, a month later, she didn't say, I miss you. Rita was handling it a little better than I was, and that discouraged me. But she was not anxious to get together. And I went on to Baton Rouge, to Shreveport for the weekend. While I was in Shreveport, I prayed this. God, if Rita is not the one for me, you know how much I love her. You know that I wanted to marry her. If she's not the one for me, I want to know that. I want to know it so I can put it aside, put her aside, forget about it all, and go on with my life. I don't want to hang around with emotional garbage and waste my life. I really want to know if she's the one. I'll wait 10 years. I'll wait 100 for her. But if she's not the one, I'd like to know that so I can put it aside and go on. Now, that's a different kind of breakup, isn't it? If you hate each other and you walk away, that's one thing. But we loved each other, so I was perplexed. God, is it for 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years? I'll wait for her if she's the one. I prayed that fervently Friday, fervently Saturday, and I may have mentioned it again Sunday morning, but Sunday afternoon and evening, I forgot about that prayer. I came home Sunday night and I called her and we talked on the phone. And it wasn't real encouraging. It wasn't real hopeful. And I remember I hung up feeling very despondent. I hung up the phone and thought, well, I guess she's just not in love. And I fell asleep. Now, the last time God spoke to me was 5 o'clock in the morning, a month earlier. When I woke up the next morning, I had almost what I would say was it wasn't a vision, it wasn't something that I could see, but in the heart, in the eyes of my heart, I could see something. I felt God was telling me that I was going to marry Rita. Now, what had I prayed all weekend? God, if she's not the one, I want to know. If she is, I'll wait. And I woke up that morning and I felt I had a vision I was going to marry. I could see myself at Northwest Bible Church in Dallas, Texas, standing right here. I could see the blue carpet. I could see the wooden pews. And I could see her in the white dress. I remember the look I saw in her eyes. Now, I feel kind of silly telling you that. And I haven't shared that with but maybe two or three people. Because I feel kind of silly about it. I'm not sure. But I felt God telling me that I was going to marry her. And I remember when I got up off the bed that day, that passage of Abraham when God said, Abraham, you're 99 years old. Yes, can't bear children, but you'll have a son. And Abraham, it says, he did not waver and think, I'm going to have a son. Well, he said I was. Oh, I bet I won't. I bet he will. Maybe I could. Abraham, it says Abraham did not waver. He considered who it was who made the promise and said, Abraham, you're going to have a son. It was God who said it. And so he did not waver. He trusted God. And I remember I got off the bed and I thought, I'm going to marry her. I'm going to marry her. God, that's great. I'm excited. And I begin telling God at that moment, I'm not going to doubt this. I'm not going to doubt this. I'm not going to waver. I'm not going to be a wishy-washy wavering person. If you told me that, I'm going to believe in God and I'm going to stand straight and tall with you on that promise. Now it's 1 year later. About 1 year later, my little apartment over there on Perkins Road. I've been here since April of last year, and this is just this past October. When it dawned on me that day, in a morning in October, it's been a year. Rita and I stopped communicating with one another. We took a vow of silence from one another. Until the Christmas time, this past Christmas, when I'd come home, we'd visit and see where things were. But we were going to be silent until this time. And in October, I thought, it's been a year, God, since that wedding vision. And when I felt you were confirming I was going to marry her, and I told you I wasn't going to waver, and I was going to keep believing it, and I can't believe it's been a whole year now. It still seems fresh to me. It still seems real. I'm glad that I'm hanging in there over a year, and I still don't. No, I have to confess, God, I'm weak. in the finitude of my flesh, I'm beginning to waver a little bit. God, I want to know. I'm getting perplexed, and I don't know if I can hang in there. I really want to know, was that really you with a wedding vision 1 year ago at this time? Was that really you, God? And so I stayed in my house that morning. I didn't come into the office. I prayed, and I kept praying. It would have been a sight if you'd been watching through the window. I was probably rolling around the floor. I was on the couch and on the floor and on the chair and on the couch and on the floor. And I was wrestling, and I was not going to let God go until He told me yes or no. Now, there's a song that we like to sing around here that I'm not real fond of. I like the song. It's not my favorite song, let's put it that way. So it's not that I would have been thinking about this song. Pass it on. There's a line in that song that goes, "The God of love has come to me." That phrase suddenly jumped into my mind while I'm wrestling there with God. The God of love has come to me. I've never told anybody this. And you can see why. I'm hesitant to tell you that God spoke to me through that song and then while I was praying there. Well, maybe He did. But the God of love has come to me. I took and said, yes, I came to you a year ago with that wedding vision. Well, I'm still perplexed. I remember I felt dissatisfied if that was really Him, but I got up and went on. Looking for the guidance of God through the breakup, through the wedding vision, now through this morning of aggressive prayer when the song phrase entered my mind. Well, I've lived with too much perplexion or perplexity, what's the word? And I decided this past week I've got to do something to find out. So Wednesday night, I haven't talked to Rita directly in 8 months, and I called her Wednesday night, and I have an announcement to make. The announcement is, I was wrong. I was dead wrong. She's not in love with me. Her love has waned. She used to wonder whether she was in love. She used to be confused about whether she was in love. She is no longer. I said, I've had a hope that we'd get back together. You tell me. Be honest with me. Have I been hoping in vain? She said yes. So I have learned something, and I'm here to share it with you. Could I give you 2 precautions for your prayer life when you think, God told me? 2 precautions. I hope you'd write them down. Take your bulletin or in the back of your Bible, there's plenty of blank pages. You ever notice that? What are they there for? Times like this. 2 precautions when you think God told me. Precaution number 1. Sometimes our flesh, that sinful, selfish aspect of our lives, sometimes our flesh will legitimize its own desires. Our flesh will use this so-called message from God to legitimize our own desires. Thus, you're going to need some extra verification. Let me over-illustrate this. There was a story of a young bachelor, a young single man who was in charge of a church office. As a result, he met a lot of people who came in the door. A particular woman with marital problems came weekly to meet with the pastor. this young man began a relationship with this woman, talking with her, and pretty soon he was involved in her life. He was involved with the problems, and he began talking a lot with her, and then eventually they were praying together about her problems, and eventually there came a day when he had a grand revelation that she was to leave her husband and run off with him. Now that's an over-illustration of the point where the man's flesh legitimized this revelation from God purely for his own desires. My point is this. If we think we hear something from God, listen to me. If we think we hear something from God that is already a heartfelt yearning of our own, then a yellow light should start flashing a warning. Or a watch. Anything will do. If we think we hear something from God that is already a heartfelt yearning of our own, then a yellow light should flash a warning, warning you that that so-called message from God needs extra verification, specifically from the Bible. You need to find some extra verification. If you have a heartfelt desire and suddenly you think you get a message from God confirming it, don't be so hasty. I had a wedding vision one morning, but I already wanted to marry Rita. I wanted to marry her. Thus, it was already my heartfelt yearning. Since I wanted to marry her, I heard it. So be careful. I should have been careful. I should have thought, no, now, let's be careful. My flesh already wants that. It might be real easy for me to imagine God's telling me that. When it is something I do not want to hear, then God speaks with absolute clarity. Have you ever noticed that? When the morning at 5 a.m. He said, break up. People, it was unmistakable. In fact, there's only one other decision I've made in my life that I was more certain was God's will than that one to break up with Rita. That was the decision to go to Dallas Seminary. I remember wrestling in my dorm room at college. My palms started sweating because I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be a preacher. I wanted to go get a PhD in philosophy and teach on the state campus. That's what I wanted to do. And I remember I got up and I was pacing up and down the floor until it was almost like a physical battle. Like God and I were locking hands and I was pushing until finally, I remember it was almost like a physical release. I said, okay, all right, I'll go to Dallas Seminary. But I guarantee you, in 4 years, if I still want to get that PhD, I'm going after it. That was the greatest decision I ever made when I was more certain than anything else that was God's will. In fact, I was more convinced that morning at 5 a.m. it was God's will to break up with Rita than I was convinced it was for me to come to Baton Rouge. Does that scare you a little bit? Seriously. Because when it's something I don't want to hear, God speaks with absolute clarity. There was a Christian couple who went to a tent meeting perhaps somewhere. And this young couple, it says, had average paying jobs. He worked at a factory and she was a secretary. They had one baby and a used car. And like most of us, they had a lot of desires. He wanted a metal detector, she wanted a new car. He wanted a fishing boat, she wanted a new sofa. They had a lot of desires, just like you and me. Well, they went to a service one night and went down to the altar to pray. And this visiting pastor at this special meeting, the visiting speaker gave them a prophetic word of encouragement. What did he say? He said, quote, children, you... As if this was God speaking to them, he was giving a prophetic utterance. Children, you have many things in your hearts that you have desired. They thought, yeah, It is my will to give you the desires of your hearts. Oh, great. And they tuned him out right there. That's all they heard. The next line he gave them, the rest of the prophecy was, turn your thoughts completely to me, and I'll open the windows of heaven to pour out a blessing upon you. But they just heard the first two sentences. You got a lot of desires? I'm going to give them to you. Because you realize if you follow the third sentence, turn your thoughts completely to me, God will overhaul your material desires. He'll cleanse them. He'll run them out of your heart, and you'll have spiritual desires. And no longer will you want a new boat, but a deeper relationship with God. But they didn't hear that. They just heard the first one. As a result, they went out with their credit cards and ran the bills up sky high. And they bought a new car with a loan they could not afford. And the pastor telling the story says they are presently paying for their tragic error. They lost a great deal of financial independence and almost lost their ability to trust God. Now, I want to confess, the last few days I felt the same thing. I've wanted to say, well, Lord, what should I preach on Sunday? I thought, well, what are you going to tell me? You going to give me another wedding vision? What if I hear something? What am I going to think if you tell me what to preach Sunday morning? I felt I'd slipped a step or two in my ability to trust God. But I just need to watch. First precaution then is your flesh will use this so-called message from God to legitimize your own desires. Secondly, prayer and fasting are no guarantee for accuracy. Now, I didn't say you won't find God's will, His leadership, if you pray and fast. I'm just saying it's not a guarantee. You might find it, you might not. There is no guarantee. Pastor told me, a pastor in this article I read said a woman came in with a list long enough to wallpaper his den. She had spent a week praying and fasting about their church and why it wasn't growing. And she came in with a list of the sins of everybody in the church. He said, would you mind if I keep this? And she said, Pastor, it's time. He said, what? It's time, she said. It's time. She thought what they should do is he'd get in the pulpit Sunday morning and read that list and purge the church. Now, she had never caused any kind of trouble at the church before, but now she's calling for the total destruction of the place. Prayer and fasting are no guarantee that you're coming in with an accurate message from God that all of us need to hear, or that even is an accurate message from God. Do you understand what I just said? Pray and fast if God so leads, and I would hope you find the answer to what you're struggling over with God, but there is no guarantee. Why? Why? Well, you'd think there is. Well, am I just making this up? Just like that morning I had the aggressive prayer, and that song came to my mind. Until finally what happened was that morning my flesh finally said what I wanted to hear. Yes, Carter, yes, you'll marry, that's it, that's right, yeah. Paul says in Romans chapter 7 that our law of sin, the law of sin working in our flesh, is always at work in us, trying to corrupt us. The law of sin, of corruption and death, is always at work. That's why there's no guarantee, because your flesh might rise up and legitimize its own desires contrary to the will of God. 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 20 through 22 say, do not despise prophetic utterances, but examine everything carefully. You think you've heard something? Well, hold fast to that which is good. And good is that which is godly, Christ-like, in conformity to His Word. So hold fast to that which is good, but abstain from every evil appearing utterance. There's no guarantee that you'll be accurate. The flesh is powerful, wanting to corrupt your desires. Your desires might creep in there. and cloud what God is saying. So be careful. God nailed me right there with those two precautions. I thought God told me I was going to marry him. It was my flesh rising up, wishing, wanting, thus hearing. Well, does God really guide us the way we want? Is there a guarantee that we could get some guidance? Well, certainly, when you look at Scripture, God guides people. And the only problem is He guided them with direct vocal revelation. Like with Ananias, God came to Ananias and said, Ananias, go to a certain city, go down a certain street, to a particular house, and there's a man there who you will lay hands on, whose name is... Live by faith. We discussed this on a Sunday night once. If the righteous are going to live by faith, you'll have to live with question marks. You'll have to live with uncertainty. You'll have to accept the fact that in some things you just don't know. That great verse in Jeremiah where God says, "For I know my plans for you." Yeah, God knows His plan for me, but I don't. I may get clued in sometime, but I don't have a complete guarantee that I'll always know. Why did Job suffer so much? Job didn't know why he suffered so much, but Job knew why he didn't know why he suffered so much, because he knew God was a personal God who might reveal Himself and might not. And we, as finite human beings, will speak the words of Paul, and these have become my favorite verse in the last month or so. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8, "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not despairing." Perplexed, but not despairing. Boy, that's me. That's where I've been the last year and a half. Perplexed, but not despairing. Oh, I'm miles from despairing. I'm not near despairing, but I'm perplexed. God knows His plans for me, but I don't. But I'll know what I need to know. And one of the greatest things I need to know is not whether I'll marry Rita. The greatest thing I'll ever need to know is Jesus Christ crucified for me.